from the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to Indigenous in the News. I'm your host, Larry Kay from the Ho-Chunk Nation, along with Gary Wilcox from the Powhatan Nation. Joining us today are three cultural leaders from Minnesota: Travis Zimmerman, site manager of the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, and Joni and Eric Buffalohead, lead singer and founder of the native blues rock band Blue Dog. Today, we learn about the museum's history and the highlights of the upcoming Native American Music and Arts Festival on August 31st in Mille Lacs, Minnesota, where tradition, creativity, and community come together in a powerful celebration of Indigenous music and art. Indigenous in the News starts now. I'm Larry Kay, and joining us from our Miami studios is Gary Wilcox. How you doing today, Gary?
Hey, I'm doing well, Larry. Today I'm excited to introduce two guests. Travis Zimmerman, who's the site manager at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, and Joni Buffalo, lead singer of Blue Dog from Minneapolis, who will be headlining the Native American Music and Arts Festival. Welcome to the show, Travis and Jody.
Thank you. And yes, we also have the co-founder of Blue Dog, my husband, Eric Buffalohead, as well.
Yeah. Showing up. Special guest. Right on. Ponka. So, Ponka in the house.
Let's get started. Travis, can you share with us the history and significance of the Mille Lacs Indian Museum and Trading Post?
Well, sure. So, my name is Travis Zimmerman. I'm the site manager at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum and Trading Post. We are a historic site of the Minnesota Historical Society. We've been a historic site since 1960. And we tell not only the story of the Ojibwe people in Minnesota, but more specifically, we talk about the history of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and their history on the shores of Lake Mille Lacs. So like I said, we've been a historic site for going on 66 years now. And we have a museum dedicated to the story of the Ojibwe. One of our rooms is called the Four Seasons Room. And what the Four Seasons Room is it's a life-size diorama of how the Ojibwe people live their life according to the cycles of the season. And it's really a highlight of our museum, where we, you know, talk about in the springtime sugar bushing and tapping maple trees for the sap to make syrup and sugar. Summertime, we talk about fishing and gathering berries and herbs and roots and gardening and harvesting birch bark. The fall, we talk about wild rice harvesting and processing. And then in the winter, talk about trapping, spearing fish, and how they survived during the winter months. So it's really, it's a great museum. We're open year-round. We have lots of school kids come. And so we really see ourselves as primarily an educational institution. And so we get anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 school kids that come through a year. And then we also offer monthly workshops. We have special events. We have Memorial Day powwow. We have storytelling in the wintertime. And then over every Labor Day weekend for the last couple of years, we've had the Native American Music and Arts Festival.
Is this an annual then? What year are we on so far?
Yeah, it is an annual. This is the third annual. And it's something that I tried to do in conjunction with our Memorial Day powwow a number of years back, I'll say pre-COVID era of things, where I tried to do, because we've done annually a Memorial Day powwow on site to honor, you know, veteran, the warriors that don't make it home. And we've done that every year at the museum since the new museum opened in 96. And so I thought, well, why not try to do maybe a music and art festival music art. I tried to do a film festival the same weekend, and it just didn't really take off. I mean, we were kind of known for our Memorial Day powwow, and that's what people came there for. And so, but after COVID, I started rethinking a little bit, and I thought, well, we kind of have the Memorial Day powwow at the beginning of summer. Maybe we can have the Music and Art Festival be something that we kind of end or wrap up the summer with. And so, the first year we had it, it was incredibly hot, and right off the lake there, we usually have a nice breeze and it stays cool, but it was 90 some degrees, which is unheard of, really by the shores of the lake. And we had an incredible turnout, and I thought, boy, if this many people are going to show up the first year we have this thing, and it's this hot, then I think we can really turn this into an annual event. So last year we had it. It was just as successful, if not more. I think we were joined by more artists last year, and so yeah, this is going to be an annual event that we really hope to grow, and who knows, maybe at some point it can be a weekend long festival.
Yeah.
Travis, what role does the museum play in trying to preserve and educate the public about an Anishinaabe culture?
We have a lot of school groups, so when we work with schools, they come up and we do lesson plans with the kids. And so we usually break them into groups of like 25 kids, per group, depending on how many students come at a time. But then we rotate them through different stations or different lesson plans that we have set up for them. And it's mostly elementary students that we get coming. So we develop lesson plans around Native American sports and games, American Indian communication. So we talk about, how American Indians communicated through pictographs and petroglyphs and different things, but also had sign language. And then we talk about the diversity of tribes and how many languages were spoken by Native people.
Right
And we
on.
also try to tie it into the fact that a lot of Native languages are endangered languages, and kind of explain what that means. That is, if you're not producing as many native speakers as people that are passing on, fluent speakers, then these languages are considered endangered. And then we also do lesson plans on the Four Seasons room itself, and walk the students through there and talk about seasonal living. And one thing we really want to try to do when people come to visit us is not have them walk away thinking that natives are something of the past, right? That whole idea, we are still here and stuff. And so even in the Four Seasons room, it's the way it's set up is to look like it would have looked like in the mid 1700s when the Ojibways moved into the area. But we really try to make sure that people know that a lot of these ways are still being practiced today, right? And
Right.
not just by Indian people. There's a lot of non-Indian people that go out and tap trees and makes maple syrup and
Sure.
sugar and go wild ricing and hunting, trapping, fishing, doing a lot of things that Native people have done for centuries. And so then we also, besides just the exhibits we have up and working with school groups, is we do workshops. And so we bring in Native artists to teach some of those traditional teachings, right? And those skills of beadwork, quill work, moccasin making, working with birch bark, making birch bark baskets, or making ash baskets, different things like that. And so we do those. And then, as I mentioned too, with some of our special events or programs, is that we're able to share that history and culture with other folks. A lot of our programs are open to the public. Many of them are free, and so people can come and like the storytelling can learn about what it means to be Anishinaabe through the stories that were passed down from generation to generation and are still being passed down today.
Today, our guests are Travis Zimmerman, site manager of the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, and Joni and Eric Buffalohead, lead singer and founder of Blue Dog, Minnesota blues musicians. Today, we're learning about the museum's history and highlights of the upcoming Native American Music and Arts Festival on August 31st in Mille Lacs, Minnesota, where tradition, creativity, and community come together in a powerful celebration of Indigenous music and art. To learn more about this grateful day, contact Travis directly at travis.zimmerman@mnhs.org or call him directly at 320-232-3847. That's Travis Zimmerman at mnhs.org or call him directly at 320-232-3847.
So let's talk about the festival, Travis. Tell us about the inspiration behind the Native American Music and Arts Festival, and how did the event come to life? Like, what breathed life into this event? Because it sounds like you guys do great things there. I'm really interested.
You have to come visit sometime.
Yes. Absolutely.
Have Larry bring you back to his old stomping grounds.
Right,
in Minnesota.
Right.
I'm headed up that way to go Sundance. In Rosebud here in about 2 weeks I'll be Sundance in Rosebud.
Just don't let them get you stuck in South Minneapolis.
I'm going around that.
take the side trip.
I think part of it is when I think about art, right? What is Native art? And it's really such a big thing. You know what I mean? It's not just 3D visual art. You know, it's writing, right? It's poetry. It's music. It's performance art. You know, all these other things. So if I really want to talk about supporting Native artists, I need to look at it in that holistic kind of view of what is art, right? Mm-hmm. And so that really got me thinking about, you know, I just have always been a fan of Native music, right? I've went to NAMI Awards in the past, Native American Music Awards, you know. Larry, I think me and you made a couple trips to Milwaukee during the festival days right? And just all over. And I thought, God, that's so cool. Why can't we do something like that right here, right? Yeah. Why can't we do something at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum? We're pretty central in the state of Minnesota. As far as the region, we're also kind of a centrally located place. And Minnesota has led the way, you know, a lot of times in different things, and had some really neat Native, you know, events throughout the year and stuff. So, you know, I guess selfishly part of it was that, hey, I want to bring a party to my work. You know, I want to be part of the party. I want to host the party, you know, type of thing. And it's grown. And last year we had 3 Native food trucks that came, you know, so we had Trickster Tacos, we had Wanawotipi, and then we had the Slush Lab. So we had somebody that did the fry bread, someone that was doing kind of your more healthier wild rice, quinoa bowls, and then some slushies to help keep everybody hydrated. So
Right.
it was a great event. And like I said, we're central part of the Minnesota Historical Society too. Some of our partners in it are the Native American Initiative Department that's in St. Paul, that's part of the Historical Society, because they work with our Native Artists in Residence program. So they've been able to work with some of our Native Artists in Residence to come up and do demonstrations during the festival. So that's been a great addition to it. Then we've also been able to partner with the Mille Lacs Band, the Corporate Ventures, and they promote it, right? And so they put it in their grand rewards player, their rewards advantage player monthly mailing that they put out. So that's great advertising for us for the event. Then each year we try to kind of change up the acts a little bit. You know, we don't want the same music performers year after year. And I think the first year I made a mistake. I had someone MC the event. Well, the event's from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's kind of hard to fill in, you know, because the musical acts usually have half an hour in between and stuff, right? And it just felt like there was a lot of dead spots. And then I thought, well, you know, this is a music festival, so why don't I have a DJ, you know, just so in between acts we can still have some music playing and stuff. So I think having DJ AO, Austin Owens from Prairie Island, was a great addition last year. And so he's doing sound again this year and music. We have a great lineup. We have Breanne Morrison, who's from Grand Portage. We have Fry Bread, which is a local band from our Neosho High School here on the Mille Lacs Reservation. The music teacher and a bunch of students have formed a band called Fry Bread, and I guess they're pretty good. I haven't heard them, but they're going around to local venues and playing, so they're excited
I
to
see
play.
that.
And then Joe Rainey, who does a mix of kind of native rap, spoken word, and mixes it with more traditional kind of powwow music. And then, of course, our headliner is Blue Dog, and that's the Buffalo Head family. And you'll be hearing from them shortly. But they actually were part of one of the music festivals I had in the past over Memorial Day weekend. They were one of our headliners. Oh, I don't know. I suppose it's almost 10 years ago now. I can't. Like I said, this pre-COVID, post-COVID. I don't know if it's been 100 years since COVID,
Before
or if it
COVID,
was just last year.
Cool. Joni, you're going to be in line with you and your husband.
Yep, we're
What do you?
looking forward. We are looking forward to it. I was just looking at the list of folks who are participating, and we just did a festival in St. Paul here this weekend. It was an Indigenous Native. Indigenous Food Truck Festival.
Oh, wow.
And so Owen was there being the MC and sound, and we had the Trickster Taco food truck there too. So it was a huge hit. So we're looking forward to another festival here in Minnesota at Mille Lacs.
Nice. Now, what are you expecting to experience at this year's festival besides being the headliner? Yeah.
A lot of energy, a lot of energy. As you've grown over the decades now, I could say, because Blue Dog's like 21 or 22 years old now. I don't get intimidated about a genre we have to fit in right now. It's just all I'm feeling and doing what I want to do, and we just have fun. We just let go, and so definitely looking forward to totally rock out the place for sure.
Yeah. Now, is this event free?
Yes, it's free, open to the public. It's from 10 to 5.
Sunday, August 31st.
All
Yep, you
right.
nailed it with the time, 10 to 5.
Thank you. Thank
Blue
you.
Dog will be probably performing after 3 sometime.
Long as you want us to.
Yeah, I think that's how I got it set up. You guys are coming in at about it's a little after
So,
3:30,
Travis.
3:15, you know,
Cuckoo.
Indian time, whenever it
Right?
happens, type of thing, whenever
Yeah.
the sound gets set up.
How were the artists and cultural demonstrators selected for the event? Like, what's the process?
You know, a lot of them are artists we work with at the trading posts, you know, to be honest with you. We just We already kind of work with a lot of different artists, so we don't really need to go out and find other artists. But we have invited other artists, and so over the years, as people hear about it, then people have contacted us. We have a committee that we work through for the festival, and that's from members of our Native American Initiative Department, some people that work from the Trading Post, and so we kind of try to put our minds together and say, hey, we try to keep them kind of local, because it's right now it's a one day festival, right? So it just really wouldn't make sense, I don't think, for people to travel from the Dakotas or from further away in Wisconsin for a one day festival. But if we ever make it bigger, then I would reach out more to regional artists. But right now, most of the artists that we're reaching out to are native artists from Minnesota. And then, as we expand, hopefully you can reach out. I mean, we did have a guy from Pine Ridge last year coming with some quill work, and so that was great. I was honored that he was willing to make that trek, and then he turned around after the show and went home, and I'm like, wow. So right now it's just been kind of through people, artists that we work with and know, and then mainly local artists.
Joni, why is it important to create platforms like this for native artists and musicians?
Well, it's all equitable access. It's like with anything. And I think a lot of Native artists, no matter what plat, you know, no matter what media it is, medium, it's you're kind of vulnerable and humble at the same time. So it's hard to be self-promoting, even as long as we've been doing this. It's just kind of a cultural shock to try to be in the mainstream society of sharing your art. So it's really important to give opportunities and opportunities from other Native communities, who understand, have some similarities in understanding the history, experiences, the challenges that Native people go through. I think it just there's just a lot of unspoken communication that way, that people just kind of understand.
I got a question for the founder. Eric, tell us who Blue Dog is and what kind of music do you jam?
Well, Blue Dog is I guess I'd call us a Native American blues and rock band. We're influenced by lots of stuff, to be totally honest. We're it's hard to put us in a genre. We go with blues because blues is so open to interpretation from any way you want to look at it, right? But we do everything from blues to some songs that are more R&B, straight ahead rock and roll, just it's whatever that influences us to what we want to do in terms of making music. We don't really want to be stuck into a genre. Oh, they're a blues band. Oh, they're a rock band. Oh, they're whatever. We don't really want to do that because most of the influences that Joni and I grew up with weren't stuck in one thing. They could do anything. Hendrix, Santana, Clapton,
Redbone.
Redbone, the Eagles, I mean, they were doing what was creative, and whatever the inspiration was, it might have been different things from, different times. So, I mean, to me, that's what music should be, is it should be something that comes from your heart and your soul and your inspiration. And I'm not really concerned about being, oh, we got to make this a blues song, or this has to be a rock song, or this is the song. This is what we got. To me, I think all songs are a gift. Most of the songs I write, I wake up in the middle of the night, got to go play the guitar because I got a gift, and I got to get it down so I can remember it. And so I don't question the gift. I just go with what it has to offer. And so that's really what Blue Dog has been for 20 years. If you listen to any of our five records we put out, that we run the gambit. I mean, we're a blues band, we're a rock band, we're an R&B band, we're whatever. We do it all.
I know you play the guitar. Do you ever sing with Joni?
No, I'm not a vocalist. I'm not a
There
vocalist.
you go. I didn't think I seen you sing yet. I was waiting
I'm not
for
a guitarist.
it.
We're a team because we each do what the other one can't do.
Good job. You do a good job. Play you guys a lot.
Well, Joni, How does it feel to be headlining the celebration of Native art and culture?
Very, very honored. Being, you know, Dakota, from South Dakota, but lived in Minnesota my whole life. So very honored to be invited and be part of the celebration for sure. It means a lot. And I just look forward to it again. It's like medicine, especially like what we're going through nowadays with the environment and politics and everything, you know, and when we've been playing lately, especially on our own communities, it's just really positive energy when we come together with everybody. So it's medicine. It feels good. All ages.
Sure, sure. Any messages you hope to bring to the audience through this concert and your music?
Come on, it's so complicated being Indian.
Let's do it.
Which message?
Your music.
There's so many. I would say the message is love. Bottom line is love, and stay together, stick together, because you're stronger that way.
Yeah.
And you know, and we just keep going forward for the future generations.
Yes, let's do some healing. Bring the music on. Oh yeah.
Where can we find your music, by the way? I'm meant to ask you that.
Well, you can go to our website, bluedognativeblues.com. We have links to where you can get downloads for individual songs or even buy whole CDs. I don't, people don't do that anymore, but we are on Spotify and other places like that. So you just go to our website, bluedognativeblues.com, and we have links to where you can buy a song or a record or a CD, whatever you call it nowadays.
Yeah. And we received a TWI Foundation recently. And so we updated our dog. If you remember the younger one, now he's a little bit more seasoned. We got some more t-shirts and stickers. Stickers are great because the kids, everyone loves them. So we just hand those out at all our gigs.
Cool.
Well, I want to thank you both for showing up today. I'm excited to learn more about this fun family festival happening Sunday, August 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Onamia, Minnesota. Good luck with the event. Stay in touch, please.
Yes, yes. Travis, Joni, Eric, it's been big fun to hang out with all three of you again. Boy, it's been a long time. I'm going to have to come back
to
Minneapolis
and
do it live. And stay in touch with us with any future updates you want to share with us. Have yourself a
thanks
great
a lot,
time.
You guys. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yes. Have a great time at the festival.
You.
Stay well.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by Larry Kay. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. If you'd like to support our program, you can stop in and donate at our homepage at indigenousinthenews.org. There you can find all of our past shows, and we are now on Spotify and iHeartRadio. Music today was from Blue Dog, Who Reign in Minnesota. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a great week and safe journeys. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.